and speak to our BBC correspondent, Rich Preston, joining me now on the line. Rich, how are you doing? Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me again, Lester. How are you?
I am well. It's a lovely, almost cloudless winter's day here in South Africa. Yeah, it's quite warm where you are over the last few days.
It is. I'm from the northeast of Scotland, so I'm very envious that you're enjoying the cooler weather, because when it's hot, I just can't cope.
Well, we start in the US, and tomorrow the US House Select Committee begins its hearings into the attack on the US Capitol building on January 6th. It was some sort of cynical attempt to prevent the confirmation of the election results there. What's to be expected in these hearings?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we all remember those pictures. They were quite incredible to see, weren't they? You know, the Capitol being stormed back in early January. As you say, the US House Select Committee begins its hearings tomorrow. The committee was created only last month. The reason it was created only last month is because Republicans in Congress repeatedly blocked attempts to form a bipartisan committee. And so this is going to be led by Democrat lawmakers. The goal of it is to establish the truth of the day and ensure that something like this can't happen again. Republicans say this is a matter for police and law enforcement, not for Congress. So that's why it's being Democrat led. The only Republican who's going to be serving on the committee will be Liz Cheney. She's an outspoken critic of Donald Trump, but there will be some Republican representation. Now, the riot, as you may remember, left five people dead, including a U.S. Capitol police officer. Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, says the committee will take as long as it takes to investigate the attack and make recommendations about what can and should be done to prevent something like this happening again. So it's going to be hearing firsthand testimonies from police officers on the front line, from U.S. Capitol Police and the Metropolitan Police Department. Now, any final report, Lester, doesn't have direct legal implications. It doesn't directly lead to so-and-so being charged or so-and-so being prosecuted. But nonetheless, we can expect these testimonies to make the headlines, and they will go down, obviously, in official government records. Allies of Mr. Trump say the entire process is going to be partisan and biased, and they say they're going to set up their own parallel investigation running at the same time. And of course, the problem with that is that will dilute somewhat the impact of the final report from this committee whenever it comes out. But those hearings begin tomorrow.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that people could be charged for inciting an insurrection, or what's been called an insurrection at the US Capitol?
Not directly. So there are separate FBI and police investigations to determine who did what and who was responsible for what. And they're following the kind of traditional, if you like, law enforcement process. The difference with this is that because it's a US committee hearing, much like, you know, Parliament in Britain, Parliament in South Africa, it goes down on the record books. So these testimonies, they are official, they are committed to document, they are committed to time, and they can be cited in potentially future court cases, but the actual charging and prosecution, that's being handled by the FBI.
Rich, Peru gets a new president this week. It's part of over the last 4 years we had seen what was known as the blue wave in South America. Conservative, right-leaning political parties and movements coming into power. Now, over the last year or so, what's been known as a pink wave, in that more socialist governments being elected into government there in South America. And the new Peruvian president, Pedro Castillo, is one of those that form this image of what's become known as a pink wave sweeping through South America at the moment.
Yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right. He's 51 years old. He's a former school teacher and union leader. So, as you say, absolutely left wing, that kind of more socialist perspective, this part of this pink wave. He actually burst onto the national scene 4 years ago when he led thousands of teachers on a strike over teachers' pay, a strike which was successful. So, yes, absolutely. This kind of, if you like, this workers' uprising. So he's going to be sworn in on Wednesday. He won the vote, which was held 6th of June. Now, he's only being inaugurated now because immediately after the vote, his rival, Keiko Fujimori, made claims of electoral fraud, said that some of the ballots were false. So these claims had to be investigated. And it was only last week, Lester, that the election authority in Peru said their investigation had finished and that there had been no fraud and Pedro Castillo was the winner. Now, for what it's worth, independent observers, including the Organization of American States, also said they found no irregularities in the vote. During his presidential campaign, he said he was going to nationalize Peru's mining and hydrocarbon sectors and create 1 million new jobs in a year. Now, that's what was widely attributed to his success in the vote. He said he wanted to unite the country in his victory speech. Now, his rival, Keiko Fujimori, who we mentioned, who claimed electoral fraud, is the daughter of the former president, Alberto Fujimori. He is serving 25 years in jail for corruption, on corruption charges and human rights abuses. But she is also being investigated for alleged corruption and money laundering. During the presidential campaign, she was kind of protected from prosecution, if you like. But now that the election has been formally announced and it's over, she is going to be investigated on these charges. Several challenges lie ahead for Pedro Castillo. COVID recovery is the big one, obviously. Peru was hit very badly by the pandemic. It shut its borders early, still suffered more than 195,000 deaths, one of the worst rates in Latin America. And of course, Peru depends on foreign tourism and that bringing money into the country. So shutting its borders in an attempt to keep COVID out also cut off that income supply. The vaccine rollout's been slow. And as with many other Latin American countries, there are issues around the environment, protecting and preserving natural resources, and also, of course, the indigenous community. So he's going to be inaugurated on Wednesday, which is also the 200th anniversary of Peruvian independence as well, incidentally.
And finally, Rich, just a quick overview of some of the coronavirus pictures that we're looking around the world. Any key developments we should be watching out for this week?
Well, generally speaking, cases are rising around the world in three main areas: Europe, Southeast Asia, and in the US. This is being driven by the Delta variant. Vaccine rollout is helping prevent hospitalization, but cases generally are rising. As of today, Croatia is going to need people to show proof of being vaccinated or a negative test to access things like festivals or even larger weddings. In Spain, the holiday island of Tenerife is going to be doing the same thing. You have to have proof of vaccination or a negative test to go to a bar or restaurant. Portugal holding an emergency meeting tomorrow to deal with a surge in cases there. Meanwhile, interestingly, here in the UK, cases are dropping. Now, you may remember we kind of unlocked a couple of weeks ago, and for the fifth day in a row yesterday, cases were at a low. Now, some say this is because kids aren't at school and kids were being tested regularly. So if you're not testing, you're not getting the positive results, obviously. But scientists and politicians are very excited about the fact that cases seem to be dropping here in the UK, and we're keeping a close eye on that.
Rich Preston, he joins me again here on the Morning Review from a view from the United Kingdom with the BBC. Rich, have a very good week.